Hey, everybody, this is the Comic Book Haters outside the Comic Book Haters studio. And super special guest today, Mr. Peter Bagg. Pete, as we said, Slufus, this is Schooley. Schooley,
hello.
Over there?
I'm here.
So, Pete, why don't you, let's get the ball rolling here. Just like to say, I'm definitely a huge fan of your work, man. I mean, I've been following you for almost 20 years now, and I love just about everything you've done. But enough ass kissing, I guess.
I've read two comic books by you.
Okay, and you're the one that's supposed to hate comic books, right?
Not supposed to.
No, he's the one that likes them.
No, this is a common fallacy. I hate comic books.
You're not living up to the name of your show at all.
No. Well, there's a lot of hatred spewing about, but
That's true.
You know, like, this is kind of ironic here because at least I love your work, so I'm not going to hate on your work. I can't, you know. As a matter of fact, Schooley, do you hate Pete Bagg's work, the two comics you read?
No, I don't.
Oh, you pussy.
What are you talking about?
There's a rousing endorsement.
Well, I don't hate it.
I can't believe you.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. There's nothing there to hate. especially with like your latest project, Apocalypse Nerd.
Uh-huh.
Those are the two comics that Schooley read, number two and three. He didn't read number one.
Oh.
Can you just tell us how that came about? I mean, this to me is a great series. You know,
thank you.
I would say it harkens back to Hate. I mean, and not to say that I haven't enjoyed the stuff in between, but, you know, I really enjoyed that. But Apocalypse Nerd, I mean, just tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I had two different ideas for a new comic. And one was I wanted to do short stories about the Founding Fathers. Because whenever I'd read books about them, I'd always come across these little anecdotes and these tiny little adventures and asides that I always thought would make for funny comic strips. But then I also had this idea, which is the main story of Apocalypse Nerd, and that was what would happen if you had like two typical modern urban guys, you know, like computer nerd types, and they were out in the woods and they got stuck in a situation where there was a nuclear apocalypse and they had to rely on their survival skills, which were basically non-existent. In other words, I was like imagining myself in that situation. what inspired that idea too was I was listening to the radio, and this is when we were leading up to the Iraq War, and the president was making, you know, Saddam Hussein and the Iraqis out to be like the biggest threat to America's security. Mm-hmm. And while he was, you know, ranting and raving about that and making up lies about weapons of mass destruction, while that was going on the radio, I heard a news story where a diplomat or somebody who represented North Korea flat out stated that North Korea had the ability and the willingness to nuke Seattle. So while we're building up this fake war, I'm sitting here in Seattle listening to somebody who represents the North Korean government announce that they can and would be perfectly happy to nuke Seattle. That's where I got the idea from.
What did you guys do to them? I mean, that's a pretty harsh. You can't kid yourself that it was random, you know. And I don't think geography had too much to do with it.
No, it's because we were the closest city to on the mainland U.S. I'm assuming that's got to be why.
Now, you're originally from New Jersey, correct?
No, I'm from New York. I'm from a town called Peekskill. Are you in New York?
No, we're in Atlantic City.
Atlantic City, right. Yeah, I'm from a town called Peekskill. I don't know if you know it.
I've heard the name, actually, before.
Right. But I lived in Jersey for 3 years in Hoboken, which isn't Jersey, but...
Yeah, we're down in the south.
Right.
World of difference.
Sure, I know Atlantic City.
Okay.
I once stayed at a hotel near that elephant.
Oh, Lucy.
Yeah, Lucy the elephant. That used to be a hotel back in, like, the, you know... I don't know, the 10s or 20s.
It's also got a window for a butthole.
Yeah, that's true. You can look out her ass onto the bars that they all got torn down, you know. Okay, Schooley, what were you going to say there?
I had a quick question because I'm a big fan of, well, I'm not necessarily a big fan of comic books. I'm a big fan of the post-apocalyptic themed anything, actually, movies.
As a genre?
Yeah. And I was wondering if you're saying that this was inspired by current news events. Have you or been inspired by any of the post-apocalyptic type movies, or are you a fan of any of those type of things?
No, not as a rule. You know, it's more like something that you dwell on. You know, just like you might dwell on death, but it doesn't mean I like movies that are about death.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not like it doesn't mean I like Ingmar Bergman movies.
Right.
But again, it was just imagine. It just simply was me not being able to get out of my head. How I would survive, because I imagine I would do terribly. And but also I couldn't help but think how hilarious that would be, you know, from a purely objective standpoint. You know, just not me per se. Of course, if it was happening to me, it'd be horrible. But to watch it happen to somebody else,
sure.
You know, just watch a nerd have to live by his wits and eat elderberries.
Now, when you came up with this concept, do you have the maybe I don't know if you plan out each book as you're writing it, or have you planned a story arc of several issues?
Well, this is six issues,
and I planned out the whole story. I wrote an outline for the whole story, and I tweak with it an awful lot as I go, but it just is remaining the same.
Okay.
Something I'm always careful not to do is to, and this has been the case with me ever since I started doing comic strips that were more than one page long, is to not make things up as I go along, or have some vague idea, but to start doing the final art on the first page before I've roughed out. Okay. If not in text, like I usually write it all out, like in text form, like a script, and then I rough the whole thing out. I draw the whole thing in ballpoint pen before I do the final art. And the reason I never do that is because when I'm reading other people's comics, I can always tell when they're making it up as they go along. I can always tell, and they always reach a logjam. They always reach some point where it's like, I don't know what to do now.
Either that or it just rambles.
You know?
Like they don't have a direction. It's just kind of like, yeah, I can definitely respect plotting it out. I mean, a lot of these guys, they're just blowing it out their ass.
Right. You know, that's a real pot smoker thing to do. I'm just going to start making it up, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing too, another hilarious thing. You don't see it too often, but I actually used to see it more often. And again, it was like another side effect of doing that, of just starting a strip before it's all planned out, is when they finally come to the end, or what is obviously the end, it's only like half a page down. It's like the comic kind of ends halfway down the page. You know, so it winds up being like 13 and a half pages long.
Are you talking about like those old DC stories?
Not DC, but more like underground. You know, I'd never read much mainstream stuff, so just underground alternative stuff.
I got you.
The one person who has done, or who used to do that in the past and did get away with it, was Crumb, you know, but just because he was so talented. Well, you know, and even he would never do that anymore. He cringes at some of his more stream of consciousness stuff now.
Now, with some of that stuff, stuff that where space had been left for ads from magazines, or just like he would just stop in the middle of the page?
No, it would just end there, and then they'd have to, you know, like make up, you know, make up a little strip to fill up that empty space.
Now, you had worked with him on Weirdo, correct?
Yeah.
Now, what was that experience like?
Well, it was no money, and it was it was an awful lot of stress. What made it really stressful was just dealing with the contributors, or people, or would-be contributors.
Were they like lackadaisical?
No, they were just all frantic and insane, and they all desperately wanted to be in the magazine in spite of its incredibly low page rate and just not open or welcome to criticism. So just lots and lots of screaming and death threats and you know, I don't enjoy rejecting people. It's a real nightmare. And I had to do it all the time. And that's the other problem too, was I was fairly new, not just at editing. I was new at being a cartoonist. So that made it even more difficult, is having people saying, "Who the hell are you?" and them having a good point when they said that.
Yeah.
Since I was a nobody. But working with Crumb was fantastic, though. He was very easy to work with and get along with. It's funny now, like, ever since I stopped working along with him, I don't see him or talk to him very often, just like once every couple of years.
Right.
But whenever I do, he very often can be extremely prickly and moody. Like if I call him up and tell him who I am, he'll just go, "What do you want?" And just moan and groan and piss and complain. And it would just be like a miserable phone conversation. But maybe out of guilt for saddling me with this thankless job, made him act extremely nice to me back when we were working together on Weirdo. Yeah.
Well, I guess he's kind of getting up there in the years, isn't he?
I'm 63 or 4.
Yeah, that's not that old.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can understand him being cranky.
Right. Yeah. He was born a cranky old man, so it kind of doesn't matter.
Now, you had said you never enjoyed rejecting people, you know, but ironically enough, one of my favorite of your stories was the reject from Weirdo. Now that's a pretty fucked up story, you know.
Right.
Any autobiographical elements? Like, is that really about you?
The main character, if you recall, the main character who narrated the story, wasn't the reject. The reject was that very strange, sickly German kid.
Yeah, and they shoved shit in his shirt and all that crap.
Right, right.
You got to read that story, Schoolie. It's fucked up.
I will get it.
It's all either based on things that happened to me or that I saw happen or that people told me about, but pretty much nothing in there was completely made up. Yeah, and none of it was fiction. It was all real stories cobbled together.
You see. Now, how about, your work with Marvel Comics? Let's get a little bit into that. I get the impression that didn't go too well.
Well, about 5 years ago, I think it was. From the mid-90s to, you know, perhaps 5 years ago. Well, ever since that first Spider-Man movie came out and did incredibly well.
Yeah.
Prior to that, Marvel was in really bad shape.
Right.
In such bad shape that they were starting to give their editors a lot more creative freedom, where it basically was, let's just let people throw shit at the wall and see what sticks, because we've got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And so that's when they called me. And they knew a Spider-Man movie was coming out.
Yeah.
And they knew that, so they wanted to get as much Spider-Man-related product out as possible. So they just called me up and said, "Do you want to write a Spider-Man comic?" And and so I said, okay, you know, the pay was good, and I thought that seemed like an incredibly unlikely and perverse assignment. And I also had an idea. I wasn't a superhero fan, and I wasn't a Spider-Man fan, but I did have an idea for the comic. So, and the editor was great to work with. It all went extremely well. But then since then, after that, then the movie started coming out, the X-Men movie and the Spider-Man movies, and all of a sudden Marvel was in the black again, and their value went way up, and somebody came along, some toy company, I can't even remember their name, it's not like Hasbro, it's some conglomerate, but they spent like way too much money buying Marvel. I don't know who owned it prior to this company buying it, but this new company bought it, so now all of a sudden the board of directors are a whole bunch of people that have never had anything to do with comics in their whole lives, but
right.
they bought Marvel because of the merchandising. They wanted to make all the toys and gigos out of the Hulk and Iron Man and all of that. But and because they spent way too much money buying the company, they were extremely paranoid and protective of the of their new brand. So, meanwhile, the idea was that, just like with that Spider-Man comic, I was going to do a similar take on other characters.
Right.
And I had already started doing a Hulk comic, but the new board of directors were completely freaked out about it. They just didn't get it, and you know, it was like a satire, you know, it was almost like a Mad Magazine satire of sorts of the Hulk. I mean, I'm sure somebody explained that to them, but for some reason they just couldn't grasp it. And in fact, Marvel used to do that in the 60s. They used to do that to their own characters with a title called Not Brand F, which I actually liked. I didn't like so much the regular Marvel titles, but I liked that, you know, just because it was like Mad. So I was doing something like that, and they just drove them crazy, and they kept making up all these new... They were the ones that made it miserable. They made all these new rules. Like, I couldn't say drugs, you know. And we were talking about prescription drugs. We couldn't even use the word. We couldn't even use the word drugs when we were talking about prescription drugs. So we had to call them serum. Give me my serum. And I finally finished the thing, and it even in spite of, or probably because of all these insane rules, like having to say serum, it came out well. I still liked, was still very happy with this whole comic. It's completely finished. It's in color. The whole thing is done.
Now,
and they paid me in full, but then once it was all done, once it reached that point and it was solicited and orders were made, these new board of directors, they just decided they weren't going to release it.
Yeah, there are
so it's just been sitting inside my computer.
You know? I remember when they did solicit that, you know, I put it on my little list of shit to get. But any chance, like, who owns the rights to publish that? Like, could you change it? You know what I mean? Like Alan Moore did that Cobweb story.
Right. That's what that, like, Fantagraphics said they would gladly publish it, and you know, they said just change it to The Bulk or something
sure,
like that.
Yeah. And it really would be a Mad magazine, you know. How about doing it with Mad? Or, I don't know.
So, but the problem is my editor at Marvel, his name is Axel Alonso.
Right.
He still very much wants to publish it as is under the Marvel banner, and he still thinks there's a chance, at least every time I do. So, like, once a year I'll write to him or call him up and ask him, what do you think? Do you think now they might release it?
Yeah. That's a shame.
But nothing's changed so far. And I think there's a... I think after... Boy. No, I'm wrong. I'm getting it mixed up with somebody else. I was about to say there might be a rights reversion, but that's not going to happen. Because I'm not going to... I don't get the rights to the Hulk.
Along the lines of Marvel comics, when I was younger, I did read a number of Marvel titles, I guess. If you had a chance to do any other Marvel superhero, who would you want to do?
Well, I always wanted to do the Hulk because that was the only character that I cared for at all. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that he didn't wear some ridiculous costume, so, like the rest of them.
Yeah.
Superheroes, even when I was when I was very little, I liked the idea of superheroes. And I also, like all six-year-old boys, had a towel tied around my neck. It would fly around the backyard. But as I got older, and by older I mean like by the time I was 9 or 10, the superhero costume, it was just so embarrassing.
Yeah,
you know, they look like effeminate clowns.
It is.
I wouldn't even. It's become redundant. Like now is like would be the obligatory time to make a gay joke. But that's what makes it even more pathetic, is that superheroes aren't gay. Their appeal isn't inherently gay, which at least that would make sense.
Well,
you know, if it was intended to be homoerotica, and if that's who was buying it, that would make sense.
Well, you know, I hear what you're saying, actually, because even when I was reading those Marvel comics when I was younger, my favorite were always like Nick Fury, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. or something like that, where it wasn't this overt.
That's just as gay, man.
Well,
come on.
Well,
right.
I don't know. I mean,
let's face it. It's all corny.
A cigar.
Yeah, that's why I like the Hulk, and I also liked Jack Kirby's artwork.
Yeah.
Because his artwork really—he was the one artist whose art I would recognize. It just really stood out from the crowd, and it just seemed like to just jump off the page.
Now, in your Hulk issue, was there like a classic? You know, peat bag, you know, like when a character's wigging out and their arms are like rubber
hands. It was all doing my like, ridiculous style.
Although I could totally picture like that, you know, Bruce Banner doing that and then turning into the Hulk. You know, that would be a nice image. You know, speaking of your original art, I actually have a piece of yours. It's the only comic art I have, or I just got one more, but I got the page where Buddy buys the, or sells the monster truck to Joel. From Hate.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's a great page. I got it hanging up in my living room.
Huh. Where did you get? Did you buy that from me directly?
I got it through that comicartcollective.com.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Great.
Yeah,
you got a good one.
Yeah. Oh, great one. Yeah, I mean, I was looking through there, and, you know, I suggest everybody getting on there and checking it out, you know, so you can get, you know, get your choice of what's left. But that's a great page. You know, definitely a great page.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, this is DJ Slufus. Sorry to interrupt, but this ends part one of our fabulous Peter Bagg interview. We will post the second half of this thrilling conversation 1 week from today. Okay? So I can't remember what today's date is, but next Tuesday we will have it up for you. So make sure you check out thecomicbookhaters.blogspot.com, or if you'd like to send us an email, shoot it on over to thecomicbookhaters@yahoo.com. So we'll have some reviews up for you on Thursday or so, and then next week, second half, so make sure you stop back. All right, everybody. Peace.